This is an interview with Josephine Kemper for the Johns Hopkins University Oral History Program dealing with women's experiences in the Melbourne World War II by Joseph Lambert at 76 Helena Drive, Brothers, Ohio, on October 11, 1990, at 11:05 a.m. Hey, Mrs. Kemper, can you tell me when and where you were born?
I was born on Quinn Street, on the east side of Youngstown, at home. I was born April 15, 1925.
On the east side?
On the east side.
Mm-hmm. And what do you remember growing up?
I don't remember anything about that neighborhood. The first neighborhood I remember, I was raised in Smoky Hollow. Did you ever hear of Smoky Hollow? Mm-hmm. Right now where I was raised, the home where I was raised, is a parking lot for YSU. And MBR that's down there, that was the neighborhood bar. It was down around the corner. My parents had lived from Quinn Street and moved on the south side of Youngstown. And then they moved down into the hollow. And my father at one time had owned his own grocery store. But at the time we lived in the hollow, he was a butcher for various places. He worked at Olds' downtown. It used to be on the corner of Walnut Street. We had a big house, and there were four children in the family, three girls and a boy. We belonged to St. Cyril's and Methodius Church, and everyone in our neighborhood on our street was from my parents were born in Czechoslovakia. They came over here, not together, separately. My mother was raised in Kamel, and my father came over when he was older, a little older. Everyone on our street was from some other country. We had Italians next door to us. We had Greeks. We had just, there was every nationality, and the parents all spoke their own tongue, and the children spoke American. And I always called it a melting pot, because that's what it really was, and that's what the hollow was. We used to walk to town to go to movies. Movies were 10 cents a piece. We got to be teenagers, we would take the bus out to Idora Park for dancing, and to the Elms Hall. The Elms Hall was a real popular dance spot. We'd go out dancing on the weekends, just boys and girls, or we'd go in the neighborhood. There were boys and girls, and we'd go together on the bus. I don't know what else you want.
What was the downtown like? Downtown Youngstown?
It was nice. It wasn't fancy as it is now. It was nice. East Federal Street had a lot of individual shops. When I was little, now this went up into when I got older, and then things changed. I think it was after I was married, the first AMP came on Walnut Street, and my father didn't like it because he said those frozen meats, you don't know how long they're frozen, they're no good. Because my father was a butcher, you need fresh meats. But when I was small and we went downtown shopping, there was Olds' had bread and meats, and there was a coffee store where you only bought coffee. There were cheese stores. There were chickens out on the street in chicken coops, and my mother would pick out the chickens and bring them home. And everything was individualized shops where you bought different things. They had foreign coffees from different countries. You could buy different cheeses. You could buy Greek cheese, different cheeses from different countries. And when my mother would go shopping, she would carry shopping bags. And then we would walk up Walnut Street Hill and down the other Walnut Street Hill to where we lived. And our street was the second street coming down Walnut Street Hill, a Webb Street. And then shopping changed. We had two neighborhood grocery stores, but mainly our mother would go downtown shopping for the groceries. East Federal Street was full of stores. There were Klein's was a department store. It was locally owned. I think there was a store on the corner down there of Walnut and Federal. It was called Central Store. It was a department store. The department stores all had bare floors. And there were streetcars. That's what we took to Idora Park, was a streetcar. I thought our town was nice. I don't like it today. It's not the way it was. And the Palace Theater was beautiful. That was one of the beautiful theaters. Then the Strand Theater was down around. There's a cigar store there now. And they would give prizes on different nights of the week. Dishes you could add to your set of dishes. And they would give different prizes when you went to the show. My mother used to go in the evening. When we were small, there was a diner on the corner of the Wick Avenue Bridge there. And there was a confectionery store across the street where you bought hamburgers, old-fashioned hamburgers, and fountain cokes. And then next door to the Palace Theater was a candy store. And when I started dating my husband, we would go to the confectionery store and get a sundae or a coke, and to the diner. And that's what we did. And he would walk me home, and then he would take a bus home to where he lived. I think they made a big mistake when they took out the Palace Theater and put in a parking lot. It was beautiful. I'm glad they saved the Powers Auditorium, because I think the Palace was even more beautiful, and that was a mistake. And McCalvey's was a locally owned department store, and it was on West Federal Street. Then in later years, they modernized and were really beautiful. And Strauss's was a local store, and we had some, really, you could buy anything you wanted. Yeah, jewelry to nice clothing, anything.
Was it always crowded downtown?
Yes, because that was the only place where people had to go shopping, and they came. There weren't too many people in our neighborhood that even owned cars, and everybody used public transportation, and you went downtown, you did your shopping, and they delivered big things, and you carried your other things home in shopping bags, and everybody did that. It was crowded, yes. Like the shopping malls. Mm-hmm. The populations increased, but I thought town was crowded. You get into a store and you couldn't get waited on right away. The clerks were nice and merchandise was nice. I did that even after we had children. We lived in Boardman, and once a week I would walk to Market Street and get a bus downtown with my children. When I just had 2 and 3, and I would hold them by the hand, and we would get on the bus. We go downtown one day a week, and Penny's was at the bus arcade, and that's where I used to buy their clothing, and we'd go down there, and I'd meet my husband and maybe come home with him. And I would go down on the bus one day a week with children. And that was the only way you could pay your gas, electric, and water bill, was going right to the building and pay it. You couldn't pay at the banks. And you had to do that. You had to go downtown to pay those bills. So you had no choice.
Do you remember what Youngstown College looked like then?
Yes. It was one building. It was on the corner. We lived on Webb Street behind the Episcopalian Church. And YSU was just the one building where they have the offices, with the big rock in the front, and that was all of it. And I had a cousin that came in from Warren on the bus, and he went there to college, and it was just the one building. Mm-hmm. And it was quite busy up there. The students, they had Sadie Hawkins Day, and it was kind of exciting. Yeah, I used to go up there and see them sometime, and I always went to the Butler Art Gallery. I used to go by myself, because we would just walk behind the wall of the church, and the Butler Art Gallery was one of my favorite places to go, especially in the summer. And they had one room in the back where they had all Indian pictures. They still have some from, we were there last week, and that's still one of my favorite places to go. We went to see some pictures of panoramic pictures of the steel mills. I would go to the Butler Art Gallery and look at the pictures there. And today I have a, our youngest daughter is married to a boy who's half Navajo Indian. We have a grandchild that's a quarter Indian. And I used to love these Indian exhibits.
What do you remember about the steel mills growing up?
My father didn't work in the steel mill, so I had no personal connection with them. But I know that we got a lot of soot from the mills in our home. The soot would come in on the windowsills, and my mother would have to wash walls quite often and curtains quite often. I had an uncle who worked in the steel mills, and I can remember, I don't know when this was when I was quite young, there was a big strike, and he took us in his car and took us down on Poland Avenue, and we watched the fighting at the gate. This strike was really, really a serious strike, and the workers were out of work for a long time. But they came up, that's when the unions really started to get power after that strike. But it was a very serious strike. And I can remember at that time, too, how poor people were, because in riding down on Poland Avenue, there were a lot of people that lived in, boxes that things would be delivered in. They were actually living in these. There were a lot of poor people at that time. I was born in 1925, and I can remember seeing them live in, like, little shacks. And we had this big house. We weren't rich, but we did have a big house. And we also had a larger family. And the rooms were, houses were big then. Those houses down there were all big houses with big rooms. And I remember that strike, and that's when everybody started to make more money and buy cars and things after that, because the union did go in. And my husband's very for the union, and I felt my own self as we got later in times when almost when the mills went out that the unions were too powerful. That was how I felt. Mm-hmm. I felt that they were greedy, and that's why they lost out. Mm-hmm. It wasn't so, because then I feel now that management was greedy, but then I felt that unions got too powerful. Mm-hmm. But I can remember that about the big strike down on Poland Avenue, seeing them at the gate, the picketers, and the fighting between the police and them.
Was that about 1937?
I don't know when that would be. I don't remember the year at all. I know there were men were hurt and killed, and it was bad. Mm-hmm. I also had an uncle in Warren who worked at the steel mills in Warren. Other than that, there were quite a bit in my family, not my father, but quite a bit of uncles that worked. Some were blood uncles, some were married into the family, and there were quite a bit of steel workers.
What was life like growing up during the Depression?
I didn't think it was so bad. Mm-hmm. But then we were middle class, we're still middle class today, and we had a rug on our living room floor. We had a linoleum on our dining room floor. My mother had a Maytag washing machine, Ringer washing machine. We had a garden. My mother canned. She sewed some of our clothes. We did not have a car, but we always had something new to wear for Easter. We got a birthday present. We didn't have bicycles. We couldn't afford them. My youngest brother was 7 years. I was the third one. He was the fourth. He was 7 years younger than me. He got a bike. We had jumping ropes and jacks, and we used to play a lot of cards. A lot of cards. We had a playground, Harrison Field. They had swings. They had checkers down there. They had a big sandbox. They had ball games, baseball games on Sunday. And then as our kids got older, our kids got involved in baseball. And there were little league teams, so it was almost the same thing like Harrison Field. I didn't think it was so bad. There were some people in our neighborhood that were wealthier than others. Those had like stained glass doors on their house and that. But there wasn't anybody really, really, you know, rich or anything. And I didn't think it was so horrible. Mm-hmm. We did have enough to eat. but things weren't expensive either. And my family, my mother and dad, were not like materialistic to go for real expensive things. We had enough. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it was so horrible.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel about President Roosevelt?
I loved him. And I can remember, I was married when he died. And I can remember when Truman went in. And, of course, being raised where we didn't have a car when we were little. And I knew that we, as I got out into the world, I realized that we did not have what a lot of other people had. But the majority of people were in the same shoes that we were. And I knew that those presidents did good for the United States because people were starting to buy more things that then it got to be necessary to have a car. As today you can't get along without one. And things changed and the people had more, and I felt, I don't know what your party politics are, but I felt like the Democrats did good for the people. So.
Can you recall your emotions after Pearl Harbor?
Yes, I was out on a date with him, and the news came over the air that Pearl Harbor had happened, and he said, "There I go," and I knew he was going to leave, and there, I didn't have anyone in my family old enough to go. My brother went a little later. He went after you got home. He joined up, joined the Air Corps. There wasn't anyone personal to go except him, but he had two brothers, and I was acquainted with them, and I knew that they were all going to go. And then I had friends whose boyfriends, and then the young couple started to get married before they went to the service. And I knew I had friends whose husbands and boyfriends were going, and it was a very emotional time. Because we knew it was a serious war.
When did you get married?
August the 4th, 1943. He came home on his first furlough.
And what was your husband's name?
His name, Jack Kemper. That is his name.
Were you employed at this time?
I worked in high school. I worked at McCrory's Dime Store downtown in summer vacations. My father was a butcher, and he worked at the 5th Street Market in Struthers, right down. We're new to Struthers. We just moved here 3.5 years ago. Down on 5th Street, where that Phelan's paper and paint store is where I worked. And I can remember working there. I was, I think, a junior in high school, and he took me to the prom, and I remember staying out real late for the prom. He took me to his prom, and then going to work the next morning. I can remember that, but I worked as a clerk in that grocery store. And then when he went over, when I married him, I went to camp with him, and I got a job in camp. It was classified as a civil service job, but what it was in the camp laundry. And there were a bunch of women. I can show you a picture if you'd want to see. Now those women, that was one of the first time I had ever left home. Mm-hmm. Would you want to see that picture?
Mm-hmm.
It's handy because I keep it. This was the first time I'd ever went away from home, and there were like 10 women from all over the United States. Mm-hmm. And I think one of them was younger than me. I was 18 when I married him. There was one a year younger, and she was from West Virginia, and she had a little baby. But her mother took care of the baby, and she came down to spend the last few months with her husband before he shipped overseas. And I worked with these women, and we had like a combination bedroom sitting room. A lot of young couples started out that way in those days. And we shared kitchen privileges, is what it was called, in Falmouth, Massachusetts. He was at Camp Edwards. And he would come in, most nights he would come in, like coming from a job. And if he didn't, I had these women, and it was a movie. It was a very small town, Falmouth, Massachusetts. In fact, he's retired now. He told me he's taking me up there on a trip. And I've always wanted to go to Ellis Island, because that's where my father always talked about, coming in on Ellis Island and having his first banana. So we're going to go there. But now Statue of Liberty shut down, the government shut down. In fact, this is all going on the tape. He retired, he was supposed to get his first Social Security check on the first, and it's never come. Our Medicare Part B hasn't come. It hasn't come because the government's shut down. So he said he might be begging for his job back. He's not too pleased.
Where did you go? What happened next after camp?
We were there. I remember coming home for Christmas till the next, till after the first of the year. Then he got shipped to Camp Campbell, Kentucky. Did you want this personal?
Sure.
And then I went down to Camp Campbell, Kentucky to visit him, and then he went into New York City, and I think in April or something. Was in the springtime sometime, he shipped overseas. This was 1944. He was actually only overseas like a year, a little over a year, 14 months or something. And he shipped overseas. He went to New York, and he made a phone call the night before he shipped out. And then the next, I got a letter. I don't know if you are familiar with V-mail. You're not. What they did was they wrote a letter and photographed it to save space on the the planes coming over. Your letter was maybe 6 inches long, and the envelope was very small, and they photographed the letter because everything was classified, and if they wrote something they shouldn't, it was crossed out, and so that they wouldn't give out any information. And he wrote me a V-mail. Do you remember the V-mail? Did you get V-mail from me? Or real letters?
Real letters.
And he wrote it. He was in England. Mm-hmm. And he went in on the second day of D-Day. I do remember that. Because when D-Day happened, his mother was really... She had a boy in the Philippines, a boy in the Navy, in the Pacific. And was Bill ever in the Atlantic? Was he?
200 yards away from him, man. Great scene.
He had a brother in the Navy, a brother in the MPs in the Pacific, and he was in he went in France and into Germany, and his mother said she raised 3 cannon fodder, but they all got back without being hurt. And he wrote, and I have some pictures. He sent pictures as he went into France and into Germany, and he sent scarves from Belgium, and he brought back different souvenirs. He went into Hitler's castle when he was there. He was discharged December 23rd, 1945. He wrote and asked me the fall of 44 if I would come overseas, because he could volunteer for the Army of Occupation. If I would come over, he was going to stay in that way, because the soldiers got privileges, free everything, and that we could travel around and see Europe together, because my parents were from Europe, and I was interested in Europe. But he asked that over there, and they said, no, you can't bring her. So he got discharged in December, and in January they started taking wives. And at that time, we didn't have any children, and I would have gone. I would have gone in without any hesitation. He'd have to tell you what it was like over there. I do remember when he got home, he had nightmares for 4 or 5 months. He used to get up screaming and thrashing around and everything, but he had some... You don't want to hear about his experiences. No, they were pretty horrible. He'd had nightmares in the beginning. I mean, when they talk about these, show flashbacks and that, he had nightmares at night. Do you remember that? And, I don't know. You're going to have to leave me.
Okay, when did you start working in the mill?
He got shipped out in 44, so when I came home from Camp Campbell, Kentucky, they needed women in the mill. And so I thought, well, that was a patriotic thing. And I had an aunt that was working there, and I thought that would be nice because I could go on the, I didn't drive or have a car or anything. We didn't have, still didn't have a car. My father didn't have a car. And I didn't know how to drive. And I would ride the bus, go downtown on Federal Street and get a bus out to Fulton Avenue and get off at stop 5. And I worked there, and I worked a lot in the night shift, and then come home in the morning and sleep. And that's, mine was mostly night shift. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any trouble getting a job. I got a job very easily. I was young because I wasn't even 21 yet when he got home, when he was discharged. So, I mean, I was very young, and they took the young women. They needed anybody. I went in, you had to have a physical, your eyes examined and everything like that. I wore glasses in high school for reading. That's all I need them for now, but I wear them because I don't want to take them on and off all the time. Mm-hmm. You had to wear safety goggles, mm-hmm. and safety shoes. And that was my first experience, actually, with slacks. That's when the women started to wear slacks. I used to have like a pair of jodhpurs because I used to go horseback riding at Mill Creek Park when I was young once in a while on a date, but I didn't have really slacks until then, and that's when the women started wearing slacks and men's type of shirts and things like that, because that's what we had to wear to work in. We had to have our hair covered to keep from getting caught in the machinery. And that's when, if you see any movies of the 40s, the women have bandanas on. And that's when we used to wear our hair up in a bandana to go to work. Mm-hmm. And there were women welders, and they would wear the hood and everything. I wasn't in that. But you had to have your hair covered, slacks, safety shoes, all of that. I don't remember what the wages were, but they were better than if you would work in a different job. There were older men. The men that were able were in the service, or men that had something physically, some kind of a physical disability, or a married man with children. But even they took, even men with one and two children, they were drafting them. So a man with a bigger family or a little older wasn't going. The man that I worked with was, I'd say at that time, 50 years old. I'm just guessing. He was Hungarian. He was great. He was really a super guy. He had a wife who was a fantastic cook, because he brought, that's what I told him the other day, he brought fantastic lunches. He used to bring, in last night's paper, there's a seven-layer, a sponge cake with chocolate filling advertised that you could buy. A sheet cake for either $15 or $30, either a 25 or 50 cups. And I took it out because I just was telling him that this man would bring this cake, seven-layer cake, in his lunch. And he would bring the most fantastic lunches. His wife was Hungarian, and she cooked Hungarian, and he would just bring really just everything fantastic. There were two of us that worked with him. This was called, is that the continuous tube mill? Is what that's called? And the pipes, so I was told, I don't know if this was so or not, the pipes that were manufactured were sent overseas to France to run pipelines for the fuel for the men who were on tracks, tractors, what do you call them? Tanks and half tracks. He was on a half track. They shot enemy planes down. And there were five of them on one half track. And the tanks and that, and these pipes were put in the ground for fuel for this government machinery. Mm-hmm. And that's what we were told that we were doing this for. There was nothing, I mean, secret about it, you know. But we would, when the pipes came out, they would be cut to pieces when they came out of the furnaces. We weren't in that part. our part was. The continuous two mil, I just remember being on this big machine. We would walk up the steps, and it was at least as wide as this room, and the pipes would come rolling on it, and what would put it on, put the pipes on and off was an overhead crane. And we would examine the ends of it to see if all the treads were there, because they had to connect these to other pipes. And that's what we did. And then he would wrap it up, and the crane would come and pick it up and take it away. Now that's what I did for 8 hours out of the time. Not, I wouldn't be there. You had a break every so often to go to the restroom. Sometimes I would get sent, we would take turns going to the, there was a coffee shop. We would have to go out and walk between the mills and go down to the coffee shop. And I worked mostly a night turn, which I liked, because in the daytime I would sleep and get up and do housework or, you know, go shopping, whatever I needed. And that way it was really better for me, because I was busy at night, mm-hmm. and I wasn't missing him so much as I would if he would, you know, because I was used to having him come home at night. This way, I took night turn. That was what I was put on, and I didn't object to it.
Where did you live at this time? Did you live with your family?
I lived at my mother's home when I worked in the steel mill.
Did you normally work 8 hours per day?
Oh, yeah. You worked your shift. 11 to 7. 11 to 7.
Did you get many days off?
You worked 5 days a week. I mean, this was, there was a lot of women. Then I moved in with his mom and dad at one time, too, but I don't remember. That was, yeah, because that's when we started working on that house, yeah. In a little later, see, I don't remember exactly the dates of everything. I bought a home around the corner from where his mom and dad lived, where he liked it. And I bought a home while he was overseas. And I remember going to sign for it. I had to have co-signers because I wasn't 21 years old. And I bought a home, and his uncles helped me do some work on it to kind of like remodel it before he got home. Mm-hmm. And when he got home, I bought a living room suit and a bedroom suit and a stove. And when he got home, he came from, we picked him up at the B&O station downtown, and he came right into his own home when he got home.
Why did you choose to work at Republic?
Because an aunt worked there who was older than me, because I was young, because it was, I got put on night turn, and that way I had somebody to go back and forth with, because it was dark out at night when you went. And some mornings at 7 o'clock, when you got out of the mill, it was still dark out. And I had a partner. She came to the work in the steel mill. And why did I choose the Republic? Mm-hmm. Because they needed workers. I really don't know how I got there. Just she was there, and I went down and signed up, and they took me. Mm-hmm. They took me and gave me a physical, and they hired me on the spot. I mean, they needed anybody, you know. And I was able-bodied at that time, really, it was close to my home to get on the bus there, and Poland Avenue wasn't that far. That's where I was needed. I knew people who like went out to Ravana and got jobs welding and that, but that was, you had to get in a carpool, and that was like complicated because, you know, then you maybe got a car, you took turns driving, and this was a way that I could do it.
Mm-hmm. How did your family react to you working in a steel mill?
Nothing. It was just a job.
Mm-hmm.
It was during the war, and nobody ever said anything.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I was the only one in it. Well, I had a sister who was a welder out in Ravana,
mm-hmm.
and no one said anything even to her. I mean, those were the jobs where the women were needed, and they took them, and that was it. It was just accepted as a way of living, just like today, the women are going out and getting men's jobs, and it was just accepted as a thing, a fact of the times.
What was your official title?
I was a helper. That's all.
Uh-huh.
A helper. That's all that it was called.
Were you intimidated at all when you first started working there?
No. No, because the women were needed. I said the guy that I worked with was super. Mm-hmm. No, and the other women, I had no problem with the women either. I mean, they were all there. They either had brothers in the service or husbands in the service or sweethearts in the service, and they were all wanted the war to end, the men to come home, and nobody intimidated anybody. There was no problem. Mm-hmm. I don't have that in my mind at all.
What were your impressions? Did anything stick out at that time when you first went in?
When I first went in, the steel mill was different than I thought it would be. It was big, and the ceilings were high, and it was dirty, and I thought that's a heck of a way to earn a living. It isn't an easy job. It was dirty work. You got your clothes dirty, the men got dirty, and that wasn't really, when I passed the furnaces and the fire was on and everything, that was hard work. That was my impression. I never realized how hard those men worked. They earned what the union gave them. They really did. I felt that unions got powerful in their latest years, but those men earned it. I thought these men have to love their families a lot to do this kind of work to earn a living. That's how they felt.
How did you feel when you saw the open hearths or the furnaces?
Odd. That's what I said, to think that men would stand there and work on them. Because you had to, when I'd go to the coffee shop, we'd cross through different mills and through different yards, and you got a glimpse of them, and I stayed away from the furnaces. They were really, to me, they were dangerous. Mm-hmm. You could really get burnt.
Mm-hmm. Was your job dangerous?
Well, I suppose anything is dangerous. You could walk down the street and turn your ankle and break your ankle, you know. But no, not really. I mean, you could get hurt if you didn't handle the pipes well, or you could fall down the steps going up to the table where the machine was, you know, where the pipes were coming down, and break your leg as far as that goes. No, it was a job, and, you know, it wasn't what the soldiers were doing. We were all there just waiting for someone to come home, or several to come home. We felt that we were doing something important, because what we were doing was going to the soldiers.
Mm-hmm. If that was the case, did you try to work every day that you could? Did you miss any days?
Very few. Mm-hmm. Very few.
Can you recall any accidents at all while you were working there?
No.
Okay. So, did you follow the progress of the war pretty closely?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I got letters from my husband, and as he, went in, and I knew what was happening over there, and we all knew that it was just a matter of time till the boys got home, and we were going to win. We had that feeling. Now, I didn't have that feeling during Vietnam, and I felt very, very rough about the United States being over in Saudi Arabia. I really do. I just don't like it. I have a grandson that's leaving on the 20th. He's 21 years old. He's in the reserves, and I just feel like, I feel like Bush has made a big mistake. That's how but I didn't feel that way in the Second World War. It was necessary. There were human rights, like when Hitler went into the different countries and took over the different countries. Those were human rights. This is all over oil, and to me it's ludicrous. I don't like it. That's how I feel. He thinks that I'm wrong, but I just feel it's ludicrous. It's material. It's not human rights.
Did you have any type of formal training to learn your
no,
duties?
No, I was taught right on the machine.
Is that hard?
No, it wasn't. And as you got it, I mean, it became easier, you know. And the boss was nice. And as I said, they all knew there was a war going on. And those men that were running those machines, they had no choice. You could have never done it. But they had no choice. They had to take what they got, because that's who came in there. They would have never hired someone my age, when you look back at it now, if they didn't need me. because there's all kind of, today there's lawsuits over everything, you know?
So there was no harassment by the men?
No. No. Did any of the women say there was?
Not really, other than a little flirting, but that's about it.
Well, this man was, the way his wife cooked, he didn't work with anybody. He was very satisfied with what he had, and I wasn't, there were a lot of women, and I wasn't, there were some of the women that dated the men in the mill. There was a little, you know, hanky-panky, but I wasn't interested in that, and I just went to work, and that was it.
What were winters like working in the mill?
It was cold. It was cold in the steel mill. We wore long underwear, heavy socks. Of course, we had heavy shoes, you know. Then you had your head tied up, and you could wear a sweater under your shirt. It was cold.
Were the summers extremely hot?
No, I don't think so. Not at night. If it was, I really don't remember. I don't know. I just went to work, felt I was doing my job. It was night turn. I was tired when I got out. That wasn't one of the things that I focused on, was the weather. And I do remember that I got laid off right almost just several weeks before he got home. And it worked out perfect because then I was getting the house ready. I was in my own home at that time. And I was getting the house ready for, because I knew he was coming home. And it worked out perfect because then I had a few months like to get, you know, reacquainted with him. And then I went out and got another job. So it worked out perfect, and I really didn't pay too much attention to the weather.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't what it was like. You lived day by day waiting for your loved ones to come back.
Mm-hmm. How were you able to buy your own home at this time?
I saved his allotments because I worked at camp. And I did it, there was, some women just went down and stayed there, but really there was nothing to do, and I worked at camp. So I saved his allotments because I got an allotment from him, and then I saved part of what I earned.
Mm-hmm.
I never was like a big spendthrift,
mm-hmm.
and I had a down payment,
mm-hmm.
and I bought a little three-room house, and Kleppes moved it. It was on the back of the lot, and it had no cellar, and his uncles were in construction, and they dug a cellar, and I bought cement blocks and everything. I gave them money, and we built a cellar under the house and moved the house up over the cellar. Then after he got home, he added another room to it, and we lived there till we had two children, and then we bought a home in Boardman.
Mm-hmm.
We bought this house here for retirement,
mm-hmm.
so because we ended up with seven children. We needed a big house, and then when the kids all left home, we didn't, so we bought a small house. We sold our big house in order to have something we could handle on retirement.
Mm-hmm. During the war, did you do a lot of things for recreation?
I went to movies. While I was with him, we used to go to USO dances. He wasn't away that long overseas. We were married in 43. I started working in the mills in 44, and he was home in 45, so there wasn't that long of a length of time. When we were first married, we lived at Camp Edwards, outside of Camp Edwards. He was at station at Camp Edwards. They had the latest movies in the, they were for nothing too, weren't they? Whatever they were very cheap. Sometimes I went to the, what'd you call where you ate? The mess hall. Sometimes I went to the mess hall and ate. Or we went to the camp. I had little restaurants for them boys. The meals were very reasonable. The USO, the first Thanksgiving we were away from home, we went to the USO in Feldman, and they had turkey and everything for the boys, and their wives or girlfriends or families came to visit or anything. And they would have the Andrews sisters and all the band records, and you would dance. And they had different games like checkers and things like that. Well, we went there because it was reasonable. once in a while we went to a nice restaurant there in town. They had the New Yorker. Where we were is where the Kennedys have their compound, where we lived. And one weekend we went to Boston on the train, because we were on the end of the Cape. We went to Boston and spent the weekend in Boston. When he wasn't home at camp at night, I had some friends that I hung around with. We would go to one of the, Falmouth was a very small town. We would go to a little bit bigger city, maybe on a bus, and do a little bit of shopping. And there was a big department store in Boston called Filene's, and they had a very nice quality of things. And we would go to one of the ones in a little town nearby, and maybe I would get a new dress or a pair of loafers or something, you know. We lived a block from the ocean. You could go for a walk down to the beach, and there were the ocean was right there. In town in the summer, it was full of tourists because people come up to Cape Cod, spend their vacation. So it was real bustling in the summertime. I wasn't there that long, you know. And I got there like in August after we were married, and the town was bustling and it had a movie theater. When I went to see him down at Camp Camel, Kentucky, was the same thing. They had all kind of entertainment in town. They had USOs. I do remember one thing about Camp Camel, Kentucky. That was the first time that I ever encountered, I can't think of the word, the distinction between blacks and whites. Because here up north, the blacks were everywhere. There weren't that many of them, but wherever you were, you know, they were there. But down there, they had, on the bus, they would have blacks to the back if I took a bus out to camp.
Segregation.
That's the first time I ever encountered that. And the restaurants were the same thing. They would have a sign outside, segregated, and I just couldn't get over that. I couldn't believe it. And that was the first time I encountered that. But it was the same thing. The USO had things, and I wasn't down there that long until he shipped overseas. Then when I got home, again, I worked. And I would go to, I always liked the big bands. When the big bands would come to the Palace Theater, I would go to see the big bands. I had an autograph book with all their autographs, and I threw it away when I was married like 10 years, and I should have kept it because the big bands have all come back into view because of television, you know. And I had Tommy Dorsey, Jimmy Dorsey, Gene Krupa, all of them, Vaughn Monroe. I had all of their autographs in this book. And I used to go to see the big bands and to movies. And he wasn't gone that long, and I worked, and then I got the home and was buying furniture, you know, picking out stuff. So, I mean, I was busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of his younger cousins I would take swimming. We would walk down from where we lived out to Lincoln Park and go swimming, and he had a nephew that I used to take him. There was a little Coke and hamburger shop down Stop 19, and I would go down because I knew the ones that, from being in the neighborhood and dating him, I knew them, and I would take my little nephew down there, and there was a jukebox there, and, you know, see different ones in the neighborhood.
As the war was drawing to an end, did you fear that you would lose your job?
No. I was anxiously waiting to lose it because then I knew the war was over. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody, there wasn't one person that today, you'll see one here and there, but then everybody had somebody gone. It wasn't, my family, my brother was younger, but they had him gone. And everybody had somebody gone. Plus our way of working, like I worked in the mill, my aunt worked in the mill, and everybody was doing was working for the war to be over. And that was the most united, I think, war you could ever have, because everybody was just waiting for it to be over. They all knew that we were going to win, but they were waiting for it. And no, I didn't worry about losing my job.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel about the men returning to their jobs?
I thought that was great.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a lesser job.
Mm-hmm.
My husband thinks that's what ruined the country to begin with. Because the women got good jobs then, and they went back out to work. He said if the women would have stayed at home, we'd have good economy.
How do you feel about the union then at that time?
The union? Mm-hmm. I thought the union was okay at that time. I thought they got too powerful 10 years after that.
Did you have to sign some sort of pre-agreement stating that you would give up your job when the men returned?
No, because I got laid off. If I did, I don't remember. I would have done so. But I got laid off because they no longer needed me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. And I was, as I said, I was off because they couldn't offer me equivalent wages. And then when that compensation was over in April, and it worked out perfect, because then I got to spend time with him, and then I went out and got another job. No, I was not the least. Did I act bitter or anything, or think I shouldn't have lost my job? No, it was just a fact of life, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
No, I thought really nothing about it.
So
I knew it was temporary. I was hoping it was temporary, and I was glad to do it.
Do you remember your last day there?
No. No, I do know that it was just a couple of weeks before he got home. It was like it was meant to be that way so that I would be there when he got home, you know? And no, I don't remember the last day.
And when was that? What month was that? Year?
He got home December of 45, so this was the fall of the exact date, I don't remember, of 45. Because I was home maybe 2 weeks, something like that. And then that I spent that time getting ready for it. I remember going downtown and buying a new hat, and I had a fur coat, a real fur coat, that he had got me. He had sent me the money to get, and I had a fur coat, and I bought a new hat, a white hat. It was in the winter, and I bought a winter white hat. That's when women wore hats. And I went down to the train station, all dressed up with this fur coat, mink-dyed muskrat, and this white hat was real high, and I thought I was good-looking when I was young. And I was all dressed up, and he got off the train. I hadn't seen him for a year and a half, something like that. And he hadn't shaved for days, and he didn't need a haircut, and he was a mess. And I thought, oh my God, I'm all dressed up, and look at him. I guess he was drunk for a week when they knew they were coming home.
Did you work afterwards?
Yes, after the compensation was over, I got a job at there was a fish dry cleaner on at East Federal Street. It was a cash and carry store. People brought their clothes in and came a few days. We didn't clean them there, but they were picked up, brought there and picked up. And I worked there until I was maybe 3 months pregnant with my first child.
Mm-hmm.
And he really didn't want me to work when he got home, but I didn't have that much to do. I mean, the house was clean, and I didn't want to sit in it all day long. And I used to walk a mile to the bus and take the bus downtown to go to work and then ride a bus home,
mm-hmm.
and walk home. And he got home like maybe a half an hour before me from work, and we did not have a car, and he rode to work with Carl. That's why I'm saying you worked with Carl for Diamond, you know, still. We got our first car about a month before our first baby was born. We had an ice box, and we bought our first refrigerator and our first car right before we had a baby. So we'd have, you know, for the baby's food, we had a refrigerator. Till then, we had an ice box. We got our first refrigerator and our first car. And our first baby was born in 1947. Well, that's how long I worked then. Well, I did work a while then, because our first baby was born in 1947.
Did you work any more after that?
No. I had That was very busy. Mm. I had 9 pregnancies in 19 years. Mm. And our baby is going to be 24. We have our baby's going to be 24, and our oldest granddaughter is going to be 23. So, I mean, well, I was busy. I raised a big family. Then when the new babies came along, I watched babies while the others went to the hospital to have theirs. We have 7 children and 14 grandchildren, 7 living children.
What do you like to do for hobbies? What keeps you busy today?
What keeps me busy? If I manage to get my housework done and my cooking, I'm not too well. We both have a lot of problems, and I have arthritis very badly. I take care of my house. I work a little bit with crafts. I have a big family, so like at the end of this month, a girl will come from Indiana with her baby. Last Sunday, a daughter came from Kent who's working on her master's. She's got a baby. She came over. But we're busy. The grandchildren come here, especially in the summer. About 2 or 3 weekends out of the month, we have a couple of kids for the weekend. We have a birthday party this week to go to. Our one granddaughter will be 8. We had, like last week, there was a party on Sunday where 4 of them had their birthdays together from 2 families because there's so many. There's 31 in the family by the time you... I'm busy, believe me. I just do... I shop, do my shopping. My Christmas shopping is all done and wrapped. Mm-hmm. And I just do... He makes horses, rocking horses. He made this. He has a workroom down the cellar.
Uh-huh.
And here's something I do. I wouldn't, if you, that you're asking, I'm showing you. Otherwise, I wouldn't even show you. Just nothing. These are blocks that I made for these are out of the plastic coffee.
Mm-hmm.
For the two, there's 2 babies in the family now. One's a year old, one's going to be a year old. Then I have rocks in some, bells in some. And then when they come here, they play with them.
Nice.
Things like that I do in the evening when I'm watching TV.
Uh-huh.
It's nothing important. Then we go out to dinner. We went out last night because he's putting a, we have a bought shower stall. He's putting a shower in the basement. We went out to look for a shower head, and we went to Denny's because they had coupons a couple weeks ago. Buy one dinner, get one free, you know. We're busy. We have enough to keep us busy. We're planning on going on an extended trip to New York and to New England, where we were first married, where we lived when we were first married,
mm-hmm.
up into Boston in that area. Mm-hmm. We're planning on that, so I don't... One of the things we're planning on doing. We're busy. As the kids were raised, I was very busy. I'm very, very busy with just, you know, taking care of them. I had kids involved in baseball and different things.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's... like in the spring, the grandchildren will all be in programs in school. 2 boy grandsons played football. We went to the games every Friday night. They're both out of school now. As the kids are in things, we're involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's 31 people, so I mean, there's always something going on.
Do you have fond memories from working in the mill?
No, not fond memories. It was, I felt that it was an important job. I didn't think my job was particularly important. It was important because it was helping the boys in the service. I don't have fond memories of it. It was like more you were there like fulfilling a job, you know. I have a good feeling for the fact that I felt that I did something that helped the boys. I didn't think I was important, I thought the job was important. And I do have good memories of the man that I worked for because he was very, very nice. He never, ever once, used a harsh word, and he was very nice, and I do remember being very impressed with his family life, mm-hmm. because, I mean, he was one that never looked, there was a little hanky-panky went on, and some of the women that were working in there with the men, but he wasn't one of them, and I felt that he was had a good marriage, mm-hmm. because the women were lonesome, you know.
Yeah.
And I felt, that's a good memory. I remember that guy. I was telling him that, just not for you, but just the other day, how nice this guy was. And
mm-hmm.
I said he really had to have a good marriage because he was a really nice guy.
How do you feel today when you drive around the valley and you see all these mills that are closed down?
I think it's terrible. I blamed the men for being greedy because they wanted everything, but now I blame management as I see what's going on with all these companies buying up other companies and everything, and I think it's really, they have done wrong to this area. I really do. Although they haven't hurt too many people in this family because they aren't into that type of thing, but one of our daughters, the one that's going to get her degree, her husband was college material, and he didn't go to college because his family had come down from generations in the mill. He was training in the roller mill, and he made like $37,000 a year, and he lost out. He's coming up into his job now. He sells some kind of rollers for printing, but he never got that job back again. And our daughter works, and he felt he didn't need a college education because his father worked in the roller mill, and that's one of the highest paid jobs. And that ruined them. There wasn't really anyone else that was working in the mill that it affected, was it? I mean, he was like groveling for a few years. He didn't work at all, and you know, I mean, he went from place to place, anything, and it was bad on his morale. It was very bad on his morale because he was raised with everything. He was raised as an only child, and let's face it, some of these people in the mill really made it pretty wealthy. And his family was of one of those, and he had everything. And when our daughter was dating him, he gave her a brand new car. And I mean, then now they've got one car that's 12 years old, and the other one the company furnishes his car. So he's never going to get back up where he was in his 20s, and he's only in his 30s. He's never going to. He had, like, when they bought, they live in New Middletown, and he had $10,000 when they got married. He was in his 20s to put down on down payment on a home, and he'll never hit that height again. You know what I mean? He'll never hit that height again. And that's really the one I saw it affect the most. Others in the family have gone into other lines of work, so really, you know, didn't affect him. Then our one son married a girl whose father was a superintendent in the mills, but he was retired because he had a bad heart. He's dead already. And I didn't see that family, although she lives here in Struthers, and she lives in the wealthy section, and she has a beautiful home. She's a widow. But our son-in-law really affected him. Really, it affected him. And his father today was laid off. He wasn't old enough to retire, and he works in Lowellville on a very menial job. He gets half of his wages from the mill, and then he's got this menial, really dirty job in Lowellville. In some kind of plastics factory, and it's an unsafe place. He's been hurt 3 times, and I mean, that family I saw get affected by it. You know, as far as what they have coming in, they're not poor or anything because they were well set then, but I saw it affect that family. And I think the government should have done something to prevent that what happened. I really do. I think there's something very lacking to have an area like this go like that. In the government, that's how I feel. And he got out of the mills, and he never liked the mills, and he got out of the mills, so I mean, it hasn't affected our wages, you know. Although we're not wealthy, but it hasn't affected us. He just didn't like the mills. When he retired, he's an electrician now for the electrical union. But he worked hard to get that too, after he got home.
you have anything else to add about your experiences in the mill?
No, I think it was great that they let the women do it, but they needed the women. And I'm glad for the experience. And I'm glad, especially now that they are shut down, because that's part of history. So I feel, there's people that don't know me for years, don't even know I worked in the mill. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really talk about it. I just asked that day, do they have any, you know, anything on the women that worked in the mill during the war? Mm-hmm. That's all that I asked about, but I didn't think I would get involved in this. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's a sad thing what has happened with the mills. Very sad. And my father didn't work in them either. But I think it's very sad. Because this valley was, everything was the mills. I mean, if you didn't live near the mills, you're somehow connected with them, you know. Was your family mill workers?
A couple of them.
Was your father?
No, we worked at Youngstown Steel Door. What do you remember about the pollution from the mills?
We had a lot of soot. In later years, we got storm windows that helped it. The soot would come in and sit, and this was big, thick black soot would sit on the windowsills. But so did every other town. Pittsburgh, we had relatives in Pittsburgh where we would go in the summer to visit them on the train. And they had the same thing. And they worked in the coal mines. We had an uncle who worked in the coal mines, and they brought home. They had the same thing. They had a lot of dirt. You know, they came in home with really dirty clothes, and that's in your washer and everything like that. But people worked hard for their living then, and most of them came from Europe, and that was better conditions they had than they had in Europe. So nobody really complained, you know. Then as I can remember people from my neighborhood moving out. Everybody moved out to the outskirts. Liberty, actually the Hollow was, the kids there went to Rand High School, and then my brother went to East High School. Then some people moved out to Liberty as the neighborhood started to get shabby, and some of them moved out to Boardman and Austin Town, and people moved away from the steel mills and left there. And then YSU started buying up that property, and you know, as they expanded, and even like up on Scott Street and that, people lived in those homes. They bought that all out. And but I don't think anybody really ever. I don't remember anyone complaining about the steel mills. Even the women, they were glad to have a living. I can remember our next door neighbors. Every Sunday, you could smell their spaghetti sauce cooking. You know, because they. We're Italian, and every Sunday, Italians, I don't know if you know any, the older ones, they always eat some type of spaghetti on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I mean, nobody ever complained. Everybody just raised their kids, and no one ever complained about the mills. We had one who's on the other side, that was a double house, and the other side was a policeman. The girl married a policeman, but his father worked in the mill. And I mean, everybody was just connected with town, and you know, you really, no one complained about the dirt or pollution or anything that came with it. I don't think you had as much garbage on the street as you do today when VFI day is. Everybody's got 4 and 5 bags out there on the street today. We all had a garden, and today it's the pollution is a different type of pollution today. The garbage is there. All these people in Poland with these gorgeous homes, with the BFI right there, and that's where we sold our house in Poland and came here. And they've got that pollution right there. You don't know what's in that ground. I think it's much worse today. That's how I feel. We all had our little bit of grass, maybe 3 foot in front of your porch, you know. And my father had a very, very... Do you remember my father's garden? He had a beautiful garden, a little piece of lot like we had, and he had a garden at one side of the house, and my mother canned for weeks out of that car, and that's the way it was, mm-hmm. you know. And those women all worked hard. I can remember the women really had, I mean, their hands showed that they worked hard. Mm-hmm. They all worked hard because most of them had bare floors and they scrubbed them, you know, with lye water, and their floors were white. I felt we were fortunate when I was a child because we had linoleums all over our house. We didn't, you know, have bare floors. Yeah. Some people had bare floors. And yet there were other people that had more than what we did. And Eddie DiBartolo came there when he came from Europe, where I was at, a couple blocks away. Lived in someone's attic. Yeah. Where a lot of wealthy people came from down there. When they left there, they went out and made it as big contractors.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mrs. Kemper, thank you very much.
Okay, I probably talked too much, huh?
We didn't.
Would you like a cup of coffee before you leave?